As the final 15 minutes began of Reading's crunch home game versus Rotherham on the weekend, the sheer clairvoyancy that ascended from around the Madstad that the opposition would score an equaliser must have been so powerful to have knocked the sun itself off its axis. It was the same old story. That Rotherham did indeed get that 1-1 equaliser, and it's a single point in the six-pointer. It's that same old story, isn't it? Welcome to episode 186 of the Tireless End Podcast with your host, Mark Mayo, and joining me this week for a chat about a game that we really desperately wanted to be a happy podcast with Panners and Nutmegs, a.k.a. Matt Lawrence, or, you know, Matt Lawrence, a.k.a. Panners and Nutmegs, whichever one you have on your driving licence, mate, is joining me on this Sunday night. How's it going, mate?
I'm all good, thank you. Like you say, would love to have been talking about 3 points, but yeah, sadly it's just the one, isn't it? And it's, like you say, it's the same old story.
Yeah, it really is a case of I was actually on the going into work on Saturday as the second half kicked off, and I went into the tube in the underground in London on the start of the second half and came out just as my phone buzzed for the notification for the equaliser. And sometimes in football you get angry at goals conceded. Wasn't angry, just disappointed, shall we say. But before we move on to the recap, I do want to say that Thursday night at the Medeski Stadium is the fans' forum with Jose Gomez. Hopefully, trains and everything, you know, commuting permitted, I'll be there. And Star, of course, will be running their usual fantastic meetings and everything. You can go up and shake hands with Jose Gomez and have a photo with him, no doubt. And that'll be very interesting. To go and see. It's free for Star members, I believe, and if you're not a Star member, then it's £10, I think, to sign up on the night. All the details over on Star. I probably even have got the date wrong as well, but as far as I know, recording this now, it's Thursday night. If I turn up on Thursday night and there's no one there, then, you know, listen to this podcast and you'll understand why. But let's crack on then, and it's the recap with the Rotherham result.
The Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So, Matt, let's begin on the goal that we conceded rather than the goal that we scored. Let's get the negativity out the way, if it is possible to get it out the way.
I like the approach.
Early on. It feels more natural, doesn't it? So,
yeah, let's end this on a high for once. I feel like I'm always bringing the mood down on this podcast. So, yeah, let's end on a high for once.
Well, this particular stat that I've developed for this to kick us off really is not a high point in any sense of the word. Is that basically, in terms of points won and lost in the last 15 minutes for Reading this season, I've not included, for example, the Blackburn result, because going into the last 15 minutes, we were ahead. So, in general speaking, the points that Reading have won in the last 15 minutes of games this season, 3. Points that we've lost, 12. And that, as a starting point for this discussion, really sums up where the team is at and why we're in this position. If you switch that around, you gave us 9 more points, you know, it'd be 9 points clear of the relegation zone. We'd be probably in 18th and thinking, not for a playoff push, but that we'd be relatively comfortable moving forward. And as it is, with that 9-point deficit in the last 15 minutes of games, it's no surprise we are where we are.
Yeah, it's a pretty damning statistic, isn't it? I mean, that 9-point deficit drags you well clear of the relegation zone, and kind of you're looking more at kind of mid-table mediocrity, aren't you? But the point yesterday, or 2 points dropped yesterday against Rotherham, that's a team in and around us as well. That'd be a 3-point deficit on them. Bolton the week before as well, that's another 2 points drop for us, and them gaining a point as well. So that's 6 points in terms of relegation rivals as well. So we really need to be picking up those sorts of points. The team just doesn't seem to be able to get over the line at the moment, whether that's a mental thing, being able to grind out results, kind of a lack of confidence in just being able to get over the line. Like you said, you always had this inevitable feeling that Rotherham would somehow get back into the game yesterday by hook or by crook. One of their set pieces, long throws, ball tossed into the box, would eventually come off. And yeah, it was rather telling that it did towards the end.
It was funny, isn't it, that the player who assists the goal is the centre-back and the player who scored it was the centre-defensive mid. And for me, this really does sum up the problem. And you mentioned mentality there, and that Rotherham throw players into the box. They're not the only team that have done it. It's probably the oldest football tactic, isn't it, in the last 10 minutes of games. Throw players into the box, get the ball in there, see what happens. And it's stunning that that works so well against Reading. It works in terms of when, as you said, the Bolton result, that Jack Hobbs, the centre-back, moved forward. No one really tracked him. Ball in, one a point. Joe Mattock scored in the away game for Rotherham in the 90th minute with the same sort of thing. And, it, you know, breaking down this Rotherham goal a bit more, it was 4v4 in the area as the ball comes in. You'd think, surely, that we have more than four players who can be inside, you know, the, around, in and around the penalty spot with 10 minutes to go in such a crucial game. There's not enough back, and as soon as these couple of unusual players come in, we concede. The forward players just aren't thinking on their feet to help defend late on. And it's disappointing on so many levels, but you'd have thought by now we'd have learnt that and that we'd have done something about it, but it's just continually not the case.
Yeah, it's sloppy goals again to be conceded. Like you say, it's 4v4 in the box, so in terms of numbers, you're even with them, aren't you? So, but it's just I think the most frustrating thing as well is that their centre half and their central defensive midfielder have combined from open play as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a percentage ball, fairly straight, that's been tossed into the box. Yeardom's been caught the wrong side, and it's been knocked down. And I think it was a J that was quickest to react to it and tapped it home. But like I said, I think it's frustrating seeing similar types of goals being conceded over and over again.
Well, it felt like an easy finish as well, which, you know, maybe you can't say. You probably can say for the Mattock goal, that was an easy finish back rather than the Hobbs one. Good header, perhaps could have been saved, but it was such an easy finish because Miazga's ball watching, he's kind of flat footed. And I know you wrote a piece in the week about Miazga's aerial prowess and how he's able to help Reading in that regard. And it's disappointing because it's a player who is, I think you're totally right when you say that he is someone who can challenge aerially, and he gets up for the first ball, but it's the second ball comes down. He's let his man get goal side, and you know, you're not playing against Barcelona and he's giving these sort of chances. It just feels a little bit, you know, just disappointing. And then there's the John O'Shea factor, which a lot of fans got very emotional about, because for me, if you're talking about balls into the box, John O'Shea is probably the ideal man to help coming off the bench. In theory, he should have the experience and the wherewithal to know what to do with it. But you look at the highlights, he's too deep to be the defensive mid because he hasn't stopped the cross. He's too high up to be a centre-back because he's not in there to deal with the cross. Whether that's his fault or Gomez's fault, not telling him what position to go in, it just feels to me like what was probably the right intention just didn't work.
Yeah, it felt like he's almost brought in kind of a halfway house position where he didn't quite have the legs to get around and press and try and win the ball back in a higher and a more advanced position, and also didn't slot in as a three and then allow the fullbacks to push on into wingbacks. So yeah, for me, that substitution, I think in hindsight we can all say it wasn't the right one to make.
Did it worry you when he came on? Did you think, oh god, what's he doing here?
Personally, yes. I know there's a fair bit of discussion on Twitter between fans talking about whether that we should be starting a central defender or a more defensive player in that holding slot in place of Rinomota. My personal opinions, we're at home to Rotherham, impetus is on us to go and win the game, and that, for me, that kind of substitution felt very negative. We're going to be inviting pressure onto us, we're allowing Rotherham to play their sort of game, allowing them to play to their advantages. For me, I think the substitution I would have made, and it's great with me saying it in hindsight and having sat there and watched it from the Eamon Dolan stand and not been on the sidelines, I would have probably brought on Barrow, just a bit of pace, Barrow or Harriet, just a bit of pace and a bit kind of a slightly more direct threat out wide than Ajari was, and try and pin Rotherham back a little bit because the spaces were opening up in behind them. They were trying to push players on, obviously, to try and get a point. I think it's almost in those moments where you kind of realise where the mentality of the side is, in terms of they are so desperate to get 3 points that they're willing to cling on to a 1-0 lead, when in reality we could have made a far more positive substitution and potentially have gone on, opened up for another goal and made that buffer a little bit bigger than the one goal that it was. I mean, I don't know what your opinion is on the matter in terms of whether you think it's a negative substitution or there are other options. I mean, we're limited in the middle at the moment as it is with Rinomota and Azatalahi out as well with that sort of profile of player in that position.
Yeah, Azatalahi is one, you know, that I can't blame any Reading fan for forgetting that he exists and that he wasn't at the... He was doing what looked like some sort of Iranian-based TV production work on the weekend. There wasn't any mention of the game, although I don't have any negative opinion on that. I just noticed it, but he's not there. With Rinomota, I think the fact that Rinomota wasn't there doesn't change these sort of things for me because he was there for the Bolton game, he was there for the other Rotherham game.
And that's very true.
And therefore, O'Shea coming on in that sense does make more sense to me because, as you say, it does play into Rotherham's hands to an extent, but at least he's the man who's theoretically capable of dealing with it. I think pinning him back would have worked as a tactic. I think that's a good point to have made because Rotherham don't seem like the team sort of team that are going to threaten on the counter-attack to me. They're not, quick.
Definitely not from what we saw yesterday. I mean.
Exactly. And leaving space in behind against them, is that really going to trouble you when you've got Moore and Miazga? Probably not. So perhaps that was Gomez misjudging it. But you said Barrow and Harriet, they did come on eventually. And that's when we come on to the sort of late period of the game after the goal that Rotherham scored and the chances that Reading still had to get a win. And Mo Barrow, let's talk about that one first. He rounded the keeper, kind of put the ball... He's basically in the corner flag and he's with his wrong foot, his right foot, he's put the ball across the six-yard box. There, Oliveira rushing in. Oliveira doesn't get there. Keeper gets it back. I'm just about minded to say it's not too bad a miss, that one, because Barrow, as I say, on his wrong foot, difficult angle, not really anyone in the box waiting for it at that moment because he's capitalised on an error to get that far. That probably wasn't the worst of the misses.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we almost need to thank Rotherham goalkeeper Rodak for giving us a lifeline there in terms of what would have been a monumental cock-up, really, in the grand schemes of things, if we'd capitalised on it. Barry did well in order to chase it down and force something from the situation in the first place. It's just a bit frustrating that he wasn't able to capitalise on it. Like you say, it was on his wrong foot. He probably had enough time to take a touch and compose himself, but that's all well and good with me saying that in the stands. I haven't made a 40-yard dash to go and get the ball and then having to stick it on my weak foot. So
no, maybe that's a YouTube series we can come up with. As TC podcasters recreate the mischances of Reading players, and if we score it, then I don't know, maybe we get a free pint or something.
Just realise the hypocrisy of this podcast when you realise we are no better.
Well, yeah, but they're rubbish at podcasting, so it's absolutely fine. Any day that if Mobile wants to make a podcast, then, you know, maybe you can come on this one still.
There's a definite YouTube series somewhere.
Absolutely. Well, there was that one. Then the other one, which I think is the glaring miss, is the Oliveira missing the sort of open goal tap-in as Ajari's shot came across. It was saved, and Oliveira's, you know, poacher's finish, you call it, if he tucks it away. I just feel bad for Jose Gomez in that sense because it's just a miss that a manager cannot legislate for. You sign a striker, he's probably one of the best paid players on the team, he's very good, we all like him, very popular, scores you goals. That is just one of those that he simply has to tuck away.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the blame definitely can't lie at Gomez's door here. This is, solely on Oliveira. Like you say, it's what he's been brought in for. He's going to hopefully get the goals that will lift us out of trouble. He's got a couple thus far, and this one really should have been. I mean, I wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago, I think, or when we signed him, saying that this is something I don't think Oliveira does enough of, is getting goals within the six-yard box. I think he's got very few from that sort of area in comparison for a number nine. So if you're looking at someone like Billy Sharp, who gets a ridiculous number of goals from that sort of area, yeah, Oliveira is not that sort of striker. He's not that kind of poacher. So it's definitely something I'd like to see more of from him. But I think if we take the positives out of it, at least he's getting in the right areas for those chances. I think it'd be more worrying if that sort of chance wasn't cropping up and he hadn't made that run, and he was, say, hanging back on the penalty spot, waiting for a cutback. So I don't think you can fault strikers that are getting into positions. I think you should be more worried when they're not getting into positions for high quality chances like that.
Yeah, it's a fair point to make. I would also say that Oliveira was the man chasing in on that Barrow cutback as he's rounded the keeper we're just talking about. And if that Barrow cutback has, you know, 4 or 5 kilometres an hour more pace on it, then Oliveira does, you know, win the game for us.
Yeah, that's it. He wins the game in the last minute.
Exactly that. We're all saying that he gets in the positions.
Give him the keys to Reading. Get him knighted.
Exactly. But alas, no, Nelson. You'll have to find different ways of getting inside the ladies' bathrooms, because I'm pretty sure that's the only reason that people get keys to the cities, isn't it? Anyway, more or less on that. Let's talk about Obi Ajaria, because he's been the man of the match on the Tarlhurst End's player ratings and seemed like he had a really useful game, to be fair. I think he's much better in that sort of advanced centre-attacking midfielder role than he is when he played deep for most of the Blackburn game. However, there is one massive negative, that his 1-0 winner not being the winner meant that my numero uno for Ovi Muno was not a headline that I could use.
How long have you been waiting for that one to crop up?
Honestly, it really came to me because I didn't know his full name was Ovi Muno until the notification for him scoring flashed up on my phone. That's how he gave it. And I was like, oh, that's a neat little headline we could use. But alas, you know, these things aren't always in the media. It doesn't always work out as you hope. So, but no, I thought his performance probably one of the real highlights of the day.
Yeah, he's quickly becoming one of my favourite Reading players to watch, I must confess. I think he's a really really tidy footballer, actually, with some really nice feet. And the move that he finished off for the goal was one of the best bits of football I've seen at Medeski this season.
Yeah, was it 9 passes with Martinez? Started out with Martinez. Ironically, started out with Martinez almost being chased down for a complete hash of a clearance, which would have been a goal to Rotherham and completely changed everything. Maybe not the final result, but yeah, 9 passes. It worked forward, and you know, at the end of the day, I guess it kind of shows that we're capable of playing good football in spurts.
Yeah, I think it highlights that definitely there's a reward to the risk that we're taking at the moment with the football that we're playing, and we do have the quality to put moves like that together and punish teams with really good football. I think on one side it's promising to know that we're capable of doing that, but on the other hand, it's frustrating to know that we've got players in the side that are capable of working a ball from one corner of the pitch all the way up to the other and sticking it in the top bins. It's kind of frustrating. We've got this level of quality, and we've seen the quality of Martinez playing out from the back, and then he's been passed forwards. McCleary's beaten his man, cut it back, and Ajaria's finished. And it's that kind of goals from midfield that we've been lacking somewhat. I know Swift started scoring more. Ajaria's got himself in the box there. It's something that we seem to be improving slightly more, which is promising.
Well, yeah, and exactly. As we've said about the defence being a bit dodgy for Rotherham, for the Rotherham equaliser, the fact is, if we score more goals, then we'll stay up, you know. If we, in the last, what is it, 6 games, if we'd have scored 1 more goal in each of those games, we'd have won 5 of them compared to 1. So we're, you
know, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's the classic fine margin sort of claim that I know Paul Clement was a bit famous for. And in that 6-game period as well, what have we scored? 4? And, you know, as I say, score 2 more goals in the right places, you get 4 more points or 3 more points here. And yeah, it just makes so much of a difference. And the fact
it does, doesn't it? Talking of fine margins as well, we scored, what was it, 3 against Bristol City at home, got 3 points. 2 against Ipswich and only got a point. 2 against Stoke and only got a point as well. So if we just tightened up at home as well, when we were scoring goals under Clement, we were too leaky. And it's really frustrating, isn't it? When we were scoring goals, we weren't picking up enough points, and we're still struggling.
I suppose that's a sign of mentality, isn't it? That the team isn't capable of manning all bases. It's all or nothing in a sense. And you know, I suppose I can't blame Gomez for perhaps thinking a bit more defence first as we go into the run. And let's end the recap then with a little brief look at how, as we tend to now, as our current feelings on the relegation battle and what we have to play for. Because obviously, in the past few weeks, we've been looking at this game as the one we had to win, and now we've drawn it. It changes things, or does it change things? Perhaps not so much, because looking ahead to the final 12 games of the season, my sense really at the moment is that We need to play as many teams as we can that have nothing to play for. Playing playoff teams and relegation rivals, they're going to be scrapping as much as they can. But if we can get ourselves up against the likes of, I mean, the teams that I've picked out in the next 12 games, Wigan, Preston, Brentford and Birmingham we have at home, Ipswich, Stoke and Hull away. Now, exactly what those teams are going to be fighting for is hard to say at the moment, but, you know, the likes of Stoke, Hull, Brentford, probably Birmingham and Preston as we get towards the end of the season, really, they're hopefully going to be on some sort of cruise control. And those are the sort of games that I can see us doing well in.
That's essentially what we've got to hope for, isn't it? That some of them have gone on holiday a little bit early. Whether they'll be looking to blood in some players from the youth system within the clubs, if they're safe and just trying to bring them through ready for next season, is another thing that we can hope for. But once again, we're almost looking for other teams to be doing us favours. We've still got our destiny in our own hands at the moment, and it's going to be a big worry if that's taken away from us. But we are looking for other teams to do us favours and looking at them being weaker than they should be, rather than us improving. I can't see us improve too much more in between now and when we play those sorts of teams.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. When it comes to you know, other teams doing us favours, it's interesting. We'll go on to the pub chat. Pub chat is going to be a proper look at... We're going to focus in on Wigan, Millwall and Rotherham and just how the running and everything is looking at this stage. But you look at Rotherham in particular, in terms of other teams doing us favours, Rotherham have played their last five games against pretty much as easy a running, you know, run of five games you could have. You've got Sheffield Wednesday at home, Reading, of course, Hull, Wigan and Millwall as well, and they picked up 5 points out of those five games, which isn't enough, you'd say. And I suppose that is one of the things that gives me most confidence in this running, or probably the thing that gives me most confidence, is that we're playing some really awful teams in terms of who we're up against to go down. You think Wigan are a pretty crap team, and they're 5 points clear of us with the game in hand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that Rotherham have only picked up 5 points from that little run, like you say, is a big bonus for us. The fact that they haven't been able to capitalise on their little run in, I'm really hoping that we're able to capitalise on ours, because this was the start of kind of the three big games, wasn't it? Rotherham, Ipswich and then Wigan. So kind of targeting two home games and an away game at Ipswich should really be looking at 7 points, even with the form that we're in.
Well, we've got one of them so far, and we'll talk about Ipswich a little bit later. But let's go on now to pub chat, and as I say, we'll be delving in a little bit more into the relegation rivals and seeing exactly what we're up against.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, let's begin with Wigan. They are the team currently on 35 points. They're 19th at the moment. Played 33, got 35 points. Millwall played 33, got 34. Then ourselves and Rotherham on 30 points after 34 played. Bolton on 26 after 34. Ipswich on 21 after 34. We'll put Bolton and Ipswich just to one side at the moment because, you know, maybe as we'll talk about later with the Ipswich game, it seems like us beating them could well be their death knell, as it were. But so Wigan... What's your sense on Wigan at the moment? They seem to me they started quite well, and then, you know, they've always had their heads above water, but they're a prime candidate to just slip in. They're that sort of team where, you know, they've not been in the relegation zone at any point of the season apart from after the 46th game, and it seems if that sort of thing is going to happen to any team this year, it's going to be Wigan.
Yeah, I think if that sort of thing is going to happen, it is going to be Wigan, because like you say, they had a really decent start to the season and really dropped off. A big contributing factor to that's been their away form. I'm just having a look now, and I think I've written down that they've averaged 0.38 points away from home when the league average is 1.12.
That's basically saying that they picked up points in one of their games.
Essentially, yeah. They're really, really struggling in terms of away form, but it's their home form that's pulling them through at the moment. So you're hoping that if they can drop some more points, could they be dragged in there with us? If we can pick up points against them, they're coming down to us. it'd be worrying from a Reading perspective if a team like Wigan with that sort of away record is coming to the Medeski and picking up points, and in worst case scenario 3 points, then the alarm bells really have got to be ringing for us that League One is beckoning.
Yeah, well, the thing is that Wigan, you know, they play Middlesbrough next weekend before they come to us, and it means that, you know, depending on our Ipswich result and obviously how they do against Boer, and then they've got Derby away. So it's quite plausible that they won't have picked up any points. And let's say we get a point at Ipswich before that game. Beating Wigan drags them to just a point away from us. And I know like a point seems like a bit of a mountain at the moment in terms of how Reading are picking them up. But those sort of psychological differences, having them within touching distance, I think is quite key. And one of the other things, as I say, about playing teams with nothing to play for, six of the 13 games that Wigan have left to play are against the top 10. Compare that to us, 7 of our final 12 games are against the teams in the top 10 as things stand. So they've not got a bad run in.
Yeah, it's not too bad a run in for them. And like I say, we're hoping, again, that teams can do us favours and they're slipping up and we can kind of capitalise on that at the moment. But I really don't like having to do this feature where we're looking around the league each week at the teams around us and looking at where they'll be dropping points and where we'll be picking them up from. It feels like we're almost cheating ourselves. We should be focusing on what we're doing at Medeski within Reading as well.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It is a case of...
It's kind of a frustrating one to have to keep looking at other teams to be worse than us rather than us being better than a team.
Yeah, and it works. It's perverse compared to when you're in the playoff and promotion push, isn't it? Because when you're looking at, you know, if you're third and you're looking at what second do, you expect them to win every week. And when they don't win, it's a big, you know, big cheer. Like, oh, good, they've dropped points. We didn't expect them to drop points because they're good. But when you're looking at bad teams... And you can't expect them to lose every week because that is silly. The team isn't going to lose every week. But every single point they pick up is, oh, God, is that going to be the point that relegates us? So there really is much less enjoyment to it. But, you know, nonetheless, we will soldier on and look at Millwall, who let's get through it quickly then. Look, Millwall, lots of mid-table teams in their running. 5 of their last 13 games are versus teams in the top 10 as it stands. They're hugely inconsistent. And the factor... for me and Millwall is the fact that they've got to play Brighton in the FA Cup quarter-final. And this FA Cup could be a blessing, or do you think it could get in the way for them a little bit?
From our perspective, I'm really hoping it gets in the way. I'd love for them to go on a run and get slightly, just take their eye off the ball in terms of the league. But whether they can afford to do that with only being, I think it's 4 points outside of the relegation zone, I don't think they're able to do that at the moment. Yeah, they've been wildly inconsistent. I think they had a really good run over Christmas, didn't they, where they picked up 9 points.
Yeah.
It was the little run against, they had us, Forest and Ipswich as well. So that's teams in and around them where they picked up points. They went away to Derby the other week as well and picked up 3 points. So they're picking up points where you're not expecting them to get them as well. And yeah, you don't really know what you're getting with this Millwall side, really. But I feel like they're going to keep the scoreboard or the points total just ticking over at a fairly steady rate.
Yeah, I must say, I feel like Millwall are going to stay up. As you say, they will just get those wins. They're not a team that necessarily draws many games. They've got 10 draws, which compared to us and Rotherham is quite few, and drawn one of their last 4. So, I think they'll probably just about be there. And Rotherham then, as you know, we've discussed them quite a bit, but we can have a quick touch on to what they've got coming up. One win since early November, still half of their games coming in the last 12 fixtures against those in the top 10. Rotherham don't have any more 6-pointers left. This is a key thing for me, in that, as we mentioned, their last 5 games have basically all been 6-pointers to an extent. So they're going to be facing teams that either are basically at the high or middle side of the table, and they're not very good, generally speaking. When they've won only 5 games all season, I don't believe they're going to be picking up loads of points in the next few weeks.
I definitely can't see them picking up loads of points. Like you said, they've just picked up too many draws I think it's 8 home draws for the season. They haven't picked up a win on the road yet, so I'm really hoping that that sort of poor away form continues for them, because that's really been what's blighting them, the fact that they haven't converted any of their 7 draws into a win. If they convert a couple of those draws into wins, then they'd be well clear of us by a few points.
I think that we're going to have to just hope that Rotherham have peaked almost with draws, and who knows if that will work out. But quickly, before we move on then, the 6 pointers to come. Bolton play Millwall on the 9th of March, Wigan play Bolton on the 16th of March, and Wigan face Millwall on the final day. So there's not that many 6 pointers left. I've not included the games with Ipswich in that, by the way. But not too many crunch ties left in the relegation zone. So it's going to be a case of shocks and picking up the points, as I say, against mid-table teams. But there's going to be a lot of games against upper, you know, playoff chasing teams. And of those teams, which do you think are actually the most likely to pick up shocks? Because I must say, it's hard to really determine that any of them will.
Yeah, it has to be a really going against the form book.
And obviously throwing in Reading in there, and whether you think that Reading will pick up any shock results.
Well, I don't know if we will, but I'm definitely hoping that we'll pick up a couple of shock ones. Unfortunately for us, I feel like Rotherham are probably one of the more likely teams to pick up shocks, purely just because of their style, and with teams in the kind of in and around the middle of the table with nothing left to play for. Rotherham, the kind of team that really do test you and will drag you out for 90 minutes and give you a real, will fight with you for 90 minutes. And if teams that are kind of sitting in 14th, 15th don't really fancy it come April, May, then I can see Rotherham starting to pick up some points at home and just getting themselves over the line that way with kind of a real robust style and being able to essentially want it more than the other team.
I can see the real siege mentality at Rotherham might be their biggest asset. Millwall, I think, probably for me, are the team that I'm worried about most in terms of picking up odd, dodgy points and odd points here and there, because, you know, you mentioned that Derby win. They're just not a team that plays well when no one's looking at them. But when people are looking at them and wondering what Millwall are doing, that seems to be when they revel in it. And the TV cameras coming down for their big games is something that I can see acting in their
favour. Keep the Sky cameras away from them.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how that gets on then. As I say, there's not too many 6 pointers coming up, apart from the one next week. We'll be talking about the Ipswich game in the final part of the show. But for now, we've got some mailbag to delve into.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
A couple that I missed, admittedly, from last week. The odd recording time that we picked for the show meant that a couple got sent in beforehand, and, you know, Twitter being a piece of technology meant that not all of them popped up on my browser as I was adding them into the plan for the show. So, a couple questions to begin with from last week that are still relevant, I like to think, as we are always relevant on this podcast. Johnny Williams, TT assistant editor, was asking, to play devil's advocate, is Jaime Gomez actually any better than Yap Stam? Risky passing around the back, slow build-up with little attacking intent, and against Blackburn, we had no right to be ahead at half-time, and our goals aside, it was dire, but he plays a good PR game. Probably much of that description you can add to the Rotherham game, and certainly the Sheffield United game since then. So, Matt, comparing Jose Gomez and Yap Stam, what's the key differences?
The PR is definitely one side of the game where Gomez has an edge over Stam. It feels like the fans have really, really warmed to him, far more so than Stam, which is incredible considering that we finished third and were one kick away from a season in the Premier League under Stam. And with Gomez, we've been down here battling relegation through no fault of his own, really. But the style is fairly similar in terms of it's a passing style, essentially. That's, I think, what we can take from this is the fact that the hierarchy at the club feel that this is the way that they want the club to progress. That's the sort of direction they want the club to go in, playing that sort of brand of football, that sort of philosophy of football, moving the ball around the park, essentially being able to play through the lines, build up from the back. And if we can recruit better if we can get a squad makeup that fits that philosophy that we're trying to implement. I think we've started to see kind of the first steps of that with the likes of Ejaria coming in, Martinez stepping into goal as well, so it's coming from back to front as well. Oliveira is definitely an improvement in terms of the style as well. He's able to drop deep, link up, and I think that's one of the reasons that the fans really like him as well, that he kind of facilitates the style of play as well.
Yeah, I know what you mean in terms of the infrastructure of the club backing the style, which isn't actually something I felt like we saw with Stam, and I think he was quite annoyed at it as well, in the sense that, you know, you have players like Dave Edwards being bought for.
Yeah, I think that's just a dead giveaway, isn't it? The fact that they've brought in guys like Dave Edwards and...
Yeah, compared to, you know, Ajari would have been, or Lewis Baker would have been ideal Stam players, wouldn't they?
100%. If we brought them in the summer before last, I think we were chasing Baker, weren't we? I remember seeing the links coming through from the media that we were chasing him, and that felt like a far more logical move for us to go and get him. I mean, no disrespect to Dave Edwards, but I don't think he was ever a bit suited or built for that sort of style of play. Similar to the likes of Bod Vaarsson, is he really that sort of player in the number nine where you're able to get him dropping off and linking up with the midfield? I don't think so. He doesn't offer enough in behind. I don't think we quite, in that summer, we got the right personnel in. The recruitment's something that's really let us down in that department as well.
And I think Stam's mentioned it himself a number of times in the media that he bought Sonny Aluko for £7.5 million, so he wasn't all bad. We got players that theoretically suited his style and that he couldn't make good, but, you know, not many managers have made Sonny Aluko good in this team.
Yeah, well, he's played under enough now, hasn't he?
George Dupree says, how can we go about keeping it tighter at the back on the road? It's taken us a good 20-25 minutes to get going in games recently, as we struggled to score goals, especially away. How can we stay in the games for longer and not simply gift wins to better teams by conceding early? Obviously, this came in the aftermath of the Sheffield United defeat, but I think it's relevant heading to Ipswich. That first 20-25 minutes at Ipswich, how do you see that unfolding? Do you think that Ipswich will have seen what Sheffield United did, as George says, and just go at us? And chase us and press us, and if they do, I think they'll probably be quite successful in it.
Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't be, to be honest. I can see them getting in our faces first 15-20 minutes and getting a few balls into the box, start overloading the box, see what we've got, whether we're able to deal with that threat aerially. And why wouldn't they get in our faces? They're at home, make it difficult for us. We're going to, like we always do now, look to try and get the ball on the floor, play out from the back. One thing I have been impressed with in more recent weeks is the fact that I do think we're able to take the sting out of the game slightly more when we're on the ball.
Yeah.
I've seen the likes of Miazga and Martinez at times just kind of put their foot on the ball, calm everyone down, and almost be able just to take the sting out, kind of refresh and reset that phase of play, and almost have like that sense of calmness that will transcend throughout the team. Because if you're looking at it, we've got a captain that's not that old in terms of playing experience as well. So just having that, and kind of some of the more experienced guys around as well, will help. I think another thing for us, especially heading into Ipswich and in terms of keeping it tight, is having that player in Rinomota who does screen back four very well. I think that's a big issue for us, and it'll be a big plus if he is back. One thing, kind of moving away from the defence as well, I think some of the forward players have to take a bit of responsibility in this department as well. This is kind of things where I'd like to see Oliveira maybe take a bit more responsibility, and just, if we are sensing that we're under pressure, buy a free kick, just relieve it, kill it for 30 seconds, move yourselves up the pitch. The wingers as well, try and just, if you're under pressure, beat a man. See if you can create some 1v1s, beat a man, buy a free kick, buy a corner. It's just look for something to try and relieve the pressure rather than constantly inviting it upon ourselves sometimes. I feel that we're almost inviting the pressure onto us.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And you say about Benamoso, it was said at the Rotherham game that he was still wearing a protective boot as he was walking to watch the game. So
not too promising.
The weekend sounds like it's going to be a bit of a difficulty for him. And you know, that's just going to have to be something that we hope Ipswich don't notice. But I think if I was an opposition manager, that is the exact first thing that I would be noticing. So, yeah, exactly how that pans out, whether it was just, protective as it was, rather than actually to make sure his foot didn't fall off, we'll have to wait.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we get on in that game, especially with the first 20-25 minutes. One stat I did pick out actually was that we've only scored the first away goal, or the first goal away, in 5 of our 17 matches. Here's a little quiz for you, Mark. How many points have we picked up from those games?
From those 5 games?
Yeah.
Well, I think we didn't score first against Preston, did we? So I'm going to say
that was one of them.
It was one of them. Oh, well, in that case,
I think it was.
In that case, it's probably going to be about 4 points.
6.
And how many have we picked up away from home in general this season? 11. Oh, so to be fair, it doesn't always bring us the glory that we need it to in that terms, does it?
Yes, I should have looked at the total away points rather than just that in isolation.
No, to be fair, it should be much higher. From is it 5 you're saying, and we picked up 6
points?
Yeah,
5,
yeah. Certainly not enough. Away from home, you have to be as ruthless as possible, don't you? So it is a well-picked-out stat in terms of just how squandering Reading have been this season. And Royals fan 9 asks us, why can't we do long throws? They're so effective. You only have to look at the one Gunter did for Jan Kermigant in the playoff season against Leeds. It moves the opposition in the box, and Maytay can win those headers. So why don't we sometimes just lump it in the box like Rotherham did? It worked for them. Long throws, I mean, me and my dad have always choked that Reading have never been able to do throw-ins properly, and it seems like no managers, certainly something that Koppel couldn't do right, and we still can't do right in terms of throw-ins. We just always find a way to give the ball away from them. And do you think that this team is set up for long throws?
I think there's other areas that I'd address first, but looking for any sort of marginal gain that we can get at the moment, there have been worse ideas rather than being able to mix it every now and again.
I think you'd have to play, as Royals fan 9 says, Maytay or, Oliveira, you think would be useful, Miazga. After that, you do kind of run out of players.
Yeah, so you could throw more into the equation there. But then
Bodvarsson, maybe.
How often are we going to get Bodvarsson, Oliveira and Maytay on the same pitch? Or on the pitch at the same time?
Yeah.
Do we want to have our centre-halves traipsing up each time we've got a throw-in near the opposition box? Probably not. That's going to really disrupt your system, especially with the way we're trying to play out from the back. You almost want that base at the back to be as stable as possible, don't you?
It'd be fine if we had a tough central defensive midfielder who could deal with counter-attacks, but that certainly isn't something that we have.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think in theory, if, you know, 90th minute, we've got all those players on the pitch, then, yeah, lob it in the box. I think have I seen McCleary take one before? I know Gunter probably
has. I think I've seen, McCleary might have slung one.
Yeah, I remember.
In the time he's been here.
Game that Eamon Dolan took charge of against Man United away from home in the Premier League back in 2013. I remember one of the only times I've ever seen Reading do this was when he put Sean Morrison on in the last 5 minutes at right back because he could do the long throws, and we launched in about 4 or 5 long throws actually. So yeah, it turns out Eamon Dolan was a fan of the long throw, and if we had those sort of players, I probably would advocate it as well. But I really do think that, you know, you need squads that fit it, and maybe we don't have that at the moment. And final question from the mailbag then is Christopher Cordery, who says, who would you keep if we stay up? I reckon 4 players, and that's not with the lone players here now. Moore, Yadom, Rinomasa, and the fourth is Obita, and he's been out for nearly 2 years. And say, why would you keep them? Because they failed us time and time again. Now, this is something, as you know, obviously we did stay up last summer, and I was a big advocate for a complete squad overhaul, which didn't really happen. And perhaps in January it happens a little bit and started getting moving more with players like Bakuna and Ilori, who, you know, were first team regulars being moved on in spite of that fact. And I think if we stay up this season, I mean, I'm inclined to, you know, 4 players left is quite drastic, because you've got a lot of fringe players, and I presume obviously Christopher's not talking about the academy players in it as well, so you do gain a reasonable amount of consistency there. Like, I can't see why you get rid of someone like Omar Richards, for example, you know, as a second choice left back. I think he's good enough. I can't necessarily see why you move someone like Callum Harriott on as well, who's again reasonable option, has potential to improve. But there's, you know, if you cut this squad down to sort of 10 or 11 players, you'd say that it's a reasonable enough base to then improve on, rather than, you know, whatever 25, 26 we've got at the moment. There's not too many you'd fight to keep. Which would you really fight to keep?
Yeah, in terms of players, I'd probably fight to keep a lot of it. It's going to depend on which league we're in, whether it be the Championship or League One. But yeah, those that have been named by Christopher, I think, well, more...
For staying up, it was the ones that he'd say he'd only keep four of. Obviously, if we go down, I presume that number...
yeah, that will fall even more, wouldn't it, really? But yeah, definitely be looking to keep more around Year Dom. I think it's been probably one of the few positive signings this summer. Rinomota's been a bit of a revelation for us over the last few months, in terms of trying to solidify us. A beater I'd like to see kept around. I know he hasn't played in a long time, but...
Well, at the end of the day, he's got a contract and no one's going to sign him.
Yeah, no one's going to be signing him, are they? So, yeah, I'd be looking to keep him around. This may be a bit controversial, but I feel like Swift offers something to us. I know he's inconsistent.
The thing is, it's the same question with Swift and a lot of these players for me, is that... They're under contract. The contracts are going to be reasonable. They're not starting.
Yeah, they're long contracts as well.
Yeah, and they are, you know, you're going to have to persuade someone to, you know, if you loan out Swift, you're not going to loan him to a League One team. I don't believe that he'd accept that at the end of the day.
Definitely not, no.
But you're going to have to sell him. Who are you going to sell him to? And it's kind of, you know, Blackett is another player on this line. And I think McCleary as well. I think McCleary's got another year on his contract. And...
Yeah.
Yes, Blackett's had links in the media for £500,000 move and stuff, but still, what do you necessarily get? It's not quite, for me. It's like
FIFA. Yeah.
If I can relate it to FIFA, you know, you've got a player who's like 70, is rating 70, and you sell him for £500,000, and use that £500,000 to add to the £600,000 that you already had, and with £1.1 million, you go and sign someone whose rating is 73, and you've improved the team, but. Real football doesn't work like that. That's kind of why it's hard to just say, oh yeah, they can go. And yeah, if someone wants them, I think a player like Swift probably can go. But, you know, it's easier said than done.
Yeah, I think the difficulty is going to come in, are we looking to shift them on, or is it a bid that's too good to refuse? And like you say, it's replacements. Who do we replace these players with? And who can we attract at the moment in the position that we're in? I mean, I don't think Blackett's been bad enough to warrant being pushed out of the door. I saw some of the figures that were being banded around. They were kind of between the £500,000 and £1 million mark for him.
Mm.
Are we going to be able to bring in a player of his quality, if not better, for that sort of money? If we do, we're probably going to have to go down to League One, League Two for that sort of money. There are players down there that can offer the quality that we need, but it's being able to identify them within the scouting team and the recruitment team.
Yeah, or maybe you go abroad, but then if you go abroad, yes, it could be like a Yaku Mate, who I think has been a good signing, although it's taken him a while, or it could be a Danzel Gravenberch, and he can be a complete waste of space and there'd be no point even trying. So.
I think we forget that they're also human beings as well, and you're asking someone to, if someone asks you to move your job abroad and instantly hit the ground running, there's a big question mark around it, adapting to a whole new country, a whole new city, and maybe not being able to speak the language. Often you almost need a grace period of say 6 months for overseas signings as well, just to settle down in the area.
Well, speaking of moving to a new country and learning a new language, the last player that I want to talk about before we move on to sort that the Ipswich game is Mark McNulty, who has gone to Hibernian and scored 4 goals in his last 3 games. And is this a player who, you know, probably maybe if we stay up it's a bit different, but if we drop down to League One, those are the sort of players that, in my mind, you kind of just, you know, back into the team, forget what happened before. Maybe Jose Gomez won't stick around. Maybe we won't be playing that style of football. You know, you got them. Might as well use them.
Yeah, well, he naturally would have been in League One, would he not, with Coventry?
Yeah, this is very true.
So maybe that is
absolutely destined to be there.
Yeah, maybe that is his beck and calling is League One. So yeah, I think the fact that we've got that sort of player within the squad is they're going to be the players that are going to be useful to us. I think it'd be far more beneficial to have him in the team than say. We've still got Sam Bulldog, haven't we? So imagine him being on the wages he's on down in League One. I can't. He's one that, if we're looking at building for next season, do we keep him around? Especially if we're in League One, we're going to have difficulty shifting that sort of wage, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, well, it's interesting and certainly staying up because, again, this is all based on Gomez. And if we go down, will he be wanting to stay if we stay up?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Will he get an offer elsewhere? Will he want to move home and decide, actually, no, this isn't for me? It is so difficult to tell exactly what this club is going to be doing over the summer. And that's why let's move on to any other business then and talk about a 90 minutes of football that will be perhaps, you know, I said last week the 90 minutes of football we were previewing was going to be crucial to the season. Perhaps this one will also be crucial to the season. It is Ipswich away from home.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business?
Well, good news to begin with, and that is that there are going to be over 1,000 Reading fans away at Ipswich on Saturday. There were no trains, but hopefully everyone knows that. And you're probably going to have to get the Star Coach or have your dad drive you like me. Thank you, Dad, as always. So 1,000 plus away fans, Saturday 3 p.m, bottom of the table team, you know, straightforward. These are the sort of away games that you dream of. Nice and easy 3 points, yeah?
Should be a guaranteed 3 points, shouldn't it? But it's a big game, isn't it? If we can get 3 points here, it definitely help us. We're not going to get a better opportunity for the rest of the season than going playing bottom of the table to go and try and get your 3 points. It looks like we're going to be taking a decent backing with us as well. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm going yet because of the dodgy trains as well. So it's whether I want to fight bus replacements and whatever to get to deep dark Suffolk or not. So
£12 a ticket, not for the
day. It's a steal, fair play to Ipswich as well. It's a steal.
Yeah, you almost wanted to stay up when you realised that those.
Yeah, it's almost too good not to go, isn't it? The £12 offer. That's the thing that's been enticing me as well to whether I do a fair few hours round trip.
At that point, it's almost worth flying to Norwich and then getting a horse-drawn carriage down, isn't it, sort of thing. But
living a champagne lifestyle, aren't they? Paydays in Norwich.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the thing is, you know, it'll be a good atmosphere because I think they'll be behind their team as well. They certainly will be 9 points adrift. It really does feel like that 9 points will obviously grow if we win. And that it just ups the importance of this game because it feels like the last chance saloon for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is going to be one that their fans are going to be really up for. It's probably one of the more realistic point games that they'll be targeting for points. It's a team in and around them. They're at home. If you get the crowd behind you, then what's not to say that they can get 3 points off us? And it's going to be, like I said earlier in the pod, it's going to be worrying if they are able to get 3 points off of us.
Well, they've got 3-1-1 draws in a row, so they're not in terrible form. I mean, pretty much the exact same form that Rotherham were in going into our game, pretty much. They've had one win in 2019. That was at home to Rotherham. I mean, who can't beat Rotherham at home? And they've had two home wins all season, which is the worst of the division. So, I mean, let's talk predictions then. What do you think will happen? Obviously, you know, real hope for a win, etc., etc. What do you think will actually happen in this game?
Oh, I'm going to be optimistic and say 2-1 Reading. Yeah, I think we should have enough quality to be able to. It really does depend how we settle on the ball. I think the first 5 minutes will really set the tone. If we can look to play out and play our sort of football, which I think hopefully we can. We've been out to places like Bolton recently and played some decent stuff up there.
played around them. We've strung together a couple of decent moves in Rotherham. I mean, that was a very bitty game, and I think the more bitty and niggly that Ipswich can make it, probably the better for them, because we like to try and dictate and set a rhythm for ourselves, and a lot of that, our performances, I feel, depend upon us kind of getting into a rhythm and being able to manipulate the ball. And something that Rotherham did well, I felt, yesterday was the fact they didn't allow us to really kind of gain any momentum or sustain pressure at any point, really.
Yeah, I can understand that in the sense that, you know, Ipswich, when they came to the Mad, said obviously it finished 2-2. We have the relatively late equaliser for that. But Ipswich played quite well that day, and it was one of the early Paul Lambert games. And I think that they're capable of, you know, when they do rally themselves, they're capable of producing a decent enough performance. And that is what kind of worries me in a sense. And we had the question earlier about the first 25 minutes you mentioned. That is going to be so key. Let's talk prediction league before we finish then. Johnny Williams picked up a 1-1 draw for Rotherham, so his pessimism paid off. Pretty much everyone else had a win, so he's into joint third. He's on 26 points with Handbags. 27 points leading the way is Wim and Ollie. Westy also had his draw, which was his fourth correct result in a row, so well done, Westy. You're currently just sat a couple points behind me in mid-table, so a relatively secure relegation. And for this one, I think I'm going to have to go 1-1. Not because I think it's necessarily, you know, it's obviously not the result I want, but, and I do agree with you, I do genuinely think there's a good chance of us getting a win, and my win result will be 2-0, because I think we pick them off on the counter-attack late on. But realistically, I think Ipswich are probably going to score first, and then I think we'll have our moment later on in the game, and I think we'll get a point out of that, and maybe it'll be a good point, because, you know, in the Championship, there are no easy games, as they say, even if you are playing a team that's won 3 of their 34 games going into it. And we'll have to see after that. It's going to be a really difficult afternoon, and probably a very difficult watch for a lot of it, but hopefully the Reading fans will be loud and proud, as we like to say. So that draws to a close this episode of the Tired Hurst End podcast, episode 186. And Matt Lawrence, joining me, Panners and Nutmegs, you can find him on Twitter. Thank you very much for popping on this week, mate.
No worries, thank you very much for having me.
And we will be back next week. Ollie, of course, with the weekend preview leading into the Ipswich game. And then we'll be back to review it this time next week. It is one of those games, you know, that I'm quite looking forward to. Going along with a big troop of away fans, stuck in that corner at Portman Road. Nice and loud, can create plenty of noise, and hopefully take back 3 points as well, and just think how much of a momentum boost that'll be going into the business end of the season, having claimed a second away win of the season and basically relegating your opponents in the process. That's what we're all going to Portman Road for next weekend. I'll see you there. Come on, you arse. You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.